Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. The precepts of the Sermon on the Mount that we want to consider now dominate so much of the study that we must give to the sermon. Keep in mind that the Sermon on the Mount is the doctrine of Christ. It is the gospel of the kingdom, the preamble of the new covenant, the forecast of the nature and the characteristics of the kingdom that began on Pentecost. We turn our attention to see what the Lord said on the subject of marriage and divorce, making and taking an oath, and a notable difference between the law of Moses and the will of Christ in dealing with resistance and the forbearance of evil. In Matthew 5:31-32, it hath been said, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery." It is appropriate that we read some other words of Jesus on this same subject in Matthew chapter 19. "The Pharisees also come unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." Well, they say unto him, "Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away?" He said unto them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery." First, note that Christ reaffirms God's original intent regarding marriage. One man, one woman, no more twain, one flesh, no putting away. That's His will. That is the way God designed it. Romans chapter 7 teaches the only honorable way for a marriage to be dissolved, and that is the death of one of the partners. Anything else is going to involve sin. The only dissolution permitted at all, the only exception to the rule that marriage is for the rest of life, is in the event of conjugal sexual infidelity. To defile the marriage bed is abominable against God and one's mate. Sexual union in marriage is honorable, but otherwise it is sin. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. God does not require a person to remain united with another who will not be faithful to the vow to keep thyself only unto him or to her. Scripture does not reveal any other grounds for divorce. Consider how this differs with so much that is allowed today. We must conclude that any divorce that is not because of fornication is not a divorce that God accepts. A so-called marriage union may be called a marriage by men when one has been previously married but has divorced for other causes, but in God's eye, it is not an acceptable marriage. It is adultery. It's nothing more than legalized adultery. God never intended marriage to end in divorce. Moses allowed divorces and demanded that they have legal recognition, but only for the protection of the parties involved. It was because the people were so stubborn against God's will. But such was never God's desire or design. And Jesus reaffirms God's law regarding the permanent nature of marriage. Marriage must be entered into with the same intent that God designed for it and has instituted from the beginning. Now, some say that one can never divorce and remarry under any circumstance. But to make that conclusion, one must ignore the exception that Jesus himself gave in both chapter 5 and chapter 19 of Matthew. One can raise real and hypothetical cases where marital entanglements are tremendously complicated. But no man has the right to set aside these basic fundamentals of marriage and divorce as given in the doctrine of Christ. They are strict, and they are inflexible. They are so much that way that the apostles recognized it and suggested it was better never even to marry. Well, it may be better if one is not willing to abide by what the Lord has taught concerning marriage. Staying unmarried is not always the worst thing that can happen. But if one does marry, he or she must obey the Lord's will regarding it. And instead of allowing people to grow up thinking this try-it-a-while attitude toward marriage is permissible, we need to teach that which the Lord has said. The lifetime union is what Christ teaches. There is a deadly and sinister doctrine being taught that when one becomes a Christian, even though he has been living in adultery because he is not properly married, that at baptism his unlawful union somehow becomes lawful. When one becomes a Christian, some think that his past sins are forgiven, and that's true, even adultery, and that can be true. But nothing in Scripture suggests that baptism makes an adulterous relationship a sanctified marriage. To so teach or to advise is to mislead, and it will cost the souls of those who are misled as well as the false teacher. To be cleansed of sin, only to return to sin, means to be lost in sin. Every marital problem will have its peculiarities, but no solution can be accepted that does not honor the fundamentals given here in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, the next point that Jesus discusses in the Sermon on the Mount is that of an oath. Again, you have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, Swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black, but let your communication be yea, yea, and nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Matthew 5:33-37. Now our text implies that some were avoiding the performance of that which they had promised to do. Some were taking an oath made on something that they considered less than the name of the Lord, and they did not feel compelled to keep their word. An oath in the name of God was binding to them, but an oath on the temple, or heaven, or earth, or themselves could be broken if it was convenient to do so. Jesus is teaching that one should keep his word in every case, and not make exceptions, such as were obviously being made. There are several ways one can sin with the tongue, such as lying, profanity, gossiping, tale-bearing, perjury, cursing, vulgarity, irreverence, taking God's name in vain, and maybe some other ways. Making an insincere promise or a vow is also a way to sin. Jesus said, Your yes and your no ought to be sufficient and adequate and reliable. People get into trouble by saying things they do not mean, or feeling compelled to underscore their words by pronouncing some oath, even profanity or something like that. In the book of James we're warned, But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath. But let your yea be yea, and your nay be nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. James 5 and verse 12. Now such ought not be necessary for those in the kingdom to be taking oaths anyway. They ought to be people of truth, and able to convey their thoughts without making an oath. But there is another matter that must be discussed here. What is the Christian to do about legal oaths, such as in civil courts, or on various documents that required a statement of swearing or affirming something to be true. Is there any difference between affirming and swearing that something is true? Well, there's no real difference. If one is wrong, they both are wrong. We're asked to make such an oath of affirmation on death certificates and insurance papers and social security documents and tax forms and in court testimonies. You are to assure that you're telling the truth. For the Christian to promise to tell the truth is asking nothing of him that he has not already promised the Lord long ago. It is but a tool of the civil power to enforce the law and to punish perjury and lying. But what did Jesus do when faced with that circumstance? When Jesus was before the high priest, the priest demanded, "I adjure thee by the living God, that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God." Matthew 26, verse 63. Jesus responded to that demand by acknowledging that he was the Christ. Now, the word adjure means to answer under penalty. It is the same as promising to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, as one is required to do when called into court for some reason to testify. So we do no wrong to obey the law of the land in this case and swear to tell the truth under those circumstances. Christ did. Neither must it be wrong to call on God to be a witness to what you say. Paul did this on several occasions, and he did not do this flippantly or with profanity, but with utmost reverence for God. The teaching has to do with one's fidelity and honesty and integrity. A man's word indeed ought to be his bond. Those in the kingdom are to be people who do not take a light and frivolous attitude toward the truth. Their word can be trusted by those who hear it. But another thought in Matthew 5, 38 through 42. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn thou not away. Now these words outline a set of principles that govern those in the kingdom, that kingdom to which all men must belong if they are going to go to heaven. They present a viewpoint and a spirit that is to be possessed and exercised toward God and man. Moses' law called for the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of response. The one who injures is injured in return. It was the principle of equal revenge and retribution for evil. And it was literally carried out. It was executed by the powers that ruled. The individual was not left to carry out the law, however, under his own vengeance, but it was done according to the law. But under the law of Christ, there is a variation noted. There are times when we must not resist, we must forbear. Now the Lord is not teaching us to just be a doormat for everyone that wishes to step on us and offend us. The Lord himself often used strong words and actions of resistance against evil, such as driving the money changers out of the temple and looking with anger upon those who were rebellious. He is not teaching an unqualified and unlimited non-resistance. The idea is to acquiesce when you can, and to comply passively against those that would take advantage of you. Now, forbearance is not always playing into the hands of the evildoer. We're not taught to never resist, regardless of the circumstances that may be imposed upon us, such as an attack against our loved ones or our person. But there are matters in which it is better to forbear and to let the other fellow have his way than to fight back. Turning the other cheek, going the second mile, giving more than what is demanded of you, they are the terms that express the willingness of those in the kingdom to pursue peace, not retaliation. Vengeance belongs to God, and God will take vengeance in time, Romans 12 and verse 19. It's not always necessary that we have our own way, or that we are victorious over those that oppose us. In those matters where we can conform to the wishes of another, where God's will is not violated in so doing, the gospel of the kingdom teaches us to give in rather than to resist, or to even the score, or to get even with retribution, as was formerly the case under the law of Moses. Jewish people were often physically abused by Roman authorities. They were subjected to the demands of Roman soldiers to carry burdens. Jesus is saying rather than retaliate and seek vengeance, Christ is teaching that it is better to forbear and even do more than is expected. Now surely this is one of the hardest of the characteristics of the kingdom we find to obey. There seems to be within all of us a spirit to hit back when we're hit. There are times when not providing protection is a neglect of duty, but also there are times when we should not resist. And we do not want to displace God and assume it is our right to settle all matters here on earth to our satisfaction by physical retaliation. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.